God's beloved people, as you know, the Christian calendar, the church year, is divided into two parts. And the first one is called the temporal cycle. And that's, you know, the church year divided into seasons of the church. And we know that one, that Advent, Christmas, Epiphany, and then there's Lent and Easter and Pentecost, and this long ordinary time that we're in now. But there is another one that we largely ignore and hardly know. It's called the sanctoral cycle. It's the commemoration of selected examples of faith. You know, the saints, the stars of the church, you know, the heroes of faith. And thus, you see, the acts of God, the grace of God that are proclaimed in the seasons of the church are brought to individual focus in particular people. So, you know, the saints are important for that reason, so that the acts of God will be related to individual everyday life, and ordinary life will be seen as capable of living and proclaiming the gospel. So the Augsburg Confession of the Lutheran Church says, "It is also taught among us that saints should be kept in remembrance so that our faith may be strengthened when we see what grace they received and how they were sustained by faith. Moreover, their good works are to be an example for us, each of us in their own calling." But here's the problem. Here's what happened. In the old days, all these saints grew up to be great legends. It grew into be a kind of folklore. And they became utterly fantastic, mostly legend. I mean, there were 9 saints, for example, who were sainted because they were credited with the silencing of croaking frogs. Saint Isaac spoke before he was born. And Saint Pumwald died when he was 3 days old, yet preached a sermon. So he became a saint. I mean, there were awful stories of masochism, you know, eyes gouged out. Oh, I won't go into all that kind of stuff. But some of the old saints were included, it seems, just because they did weird things. Like Saint Bovo, for example, forsook his wealth and went to live in a hollow tree. So there you go. Others, you know, were completely fictitious. And so it was a small wonder that, you know, finally the church and the reformers among them rejected such legends. But unfortunately, when they tried to, you know, they kind of got rid of all the saints and we hardly pay any attention to them. You know, Luther said, you know, the church and theology is sometimes like a drunken peasant, you know, who gets up on one side of the horse and falls off the other. And that's kind of what we did with saints, you know, because they got all this, and then we just, in trying to fix it, we kind of got rid of them. But if you look in your books, in your hymn books, page 54 on, for some pages, there's a commemoration of the saints. Just a wonderful collection, examples of faith, who can help us grow in faith. It's Thomas Merton, in his book, Seventh Story Mountain, said this: "It's a wonderful experience to discover a new saint, for God's greatly magnified and marvelous in each one of his saints, differently in each one. There are no 2 saints alike, but all of them are like God in a different and special way, each one showing forth God's glorious graces in an astonishing new way." They were people like us. Their holiness doesn't block their humanity. They made it successfully through this life in all its troubles and disappointments and frustrations and failures and pettiness. You know, they have human failings and shortcomings. Phyllis McGinley once said, "The wonderful thing about saints is that they were human. They lost their tempers. They got hungry. They scolded God. They were egotistical or impatient. They made mistakes and then regretted them. Still, they went on doggedly blundering toward God and heaven." So, it's good news to discover that the great people of God were like us. Not always right or good or likable, but they had this drive toward wholeness in integrity and prayer and love and grace. I had forgotten about St. Lawrence, for example, whose day was just this past week, and so I bring him up. In 258, Lawrence was martyred in the city of Rome. He was Lawrence, but he spelled it differently there. It was weird. And he had been brought to Rome from what is now Spain to be a deacon in the church. And like in Acts, the deacons, there were seven of them, and their job was twofold. One was to take care of the finances of the church, and especially to take care of the poor and those in need. And so it was the time of persecution, and the emperor, Valerian, called Lawrence to his palace and said, "Bring the treasure of the church." He was going to confiscate it. So Lawrence collected all the lepers, the poor, the sick, and he brought them to the emperor and said, "Here is the true treasure of the church." See, that is not what Valerian had in mind. And he immediately, sentenced him to death, and he was put to the torch on August 10th, 258. But when I read that Hebrews lesson, 11 and 12, about this great cloud of witnesses, I was thinking of the great saints, but also our personal saints. You know, we all have personal saints that just surrounded us with love and care and kind of sent us on our way and still hang in there. And people who lived and befriended, supported, enabled, loved us were always there for us. Annie Lamont, in that book I mentioned a few weeks ago, Help, Thanks, Wow, called these personal saints her personal pit crew. Remember that? "Most humbling of all gifts," she says, "we have been given, is the life-saving gift that your pit crew of friends has been for you. All the experiences you shared, the journeys together, the collaborations, births, deaths, moves, divorces, rehabs, vacations, the solidarity you have shown one another. Every so often you realize that without all of them, your life would have been barren, pathetic. It would be death of a salesman, though with email and texting. The wonder is only partly that somehow," she goes on, "you lured them into your web 10 years ago, 20, even 40 years ago, and they totally stand with you. The more astonishing thing is that these greatest of all people feel the same way about you. Horrible, grim, self-absorbed you." Someone said that a good marriage is one in which each spouse secretly thinks he or she got the better part of the deal. And she says, this is also true about friends. Therefore, the author of Hebrews says, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin that clings so closely, and let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us. Now, I'm 71 going on 72, and I don't run so fast anymore, so For me, it helps to use a different image than a race. And I prefer, much to your surprise, I'm sure, art. For me, our lives are like an unfinished art form. Your life is like an unfinished painting, a poem, a story of the gospel in your little acre of the kingdom. You can paint and repaint your being, you see, shape and reshape who you are, write and rewrite the music of your life, dance daringly through the human comedy, play your various roles on the stage of a constantly changing, shifting world. And it is all the agony and ecstasy of an artist. Agony, because you are ceaselessly creating, incessantly improving, endlessly dissatisfied, now and again in despair, because the grace you are painting, the Christ you are recreating, is always so very near and so far. You are at once a saint and a sinner. An ecstasy, because you are on the way, while not arrived yet, becoming the gospel, the good news. And there are times when you can scarcely contain yourself. One of Mary and our friends, who is a pastor in D.C., worked with a pastor there by name Gordon Cosby, and she sent us a little book of some excerpts of his sermons or something, and he said similar thing, and I want to tell it to you, although he starts kind of strangely. He says, way down deep, for some of us not so deep, many of us are angry. Many are the reasons for anger, but one of the least understood and most important is this: the denial of creativity. Isn't it? Believe me, he says, if we deny or block our creativity, we will be angry. So, if you need to write a poem, you better struggle to write it, even if you have to eat simply and live in a garret. If you need to write a book, get busy writing it. If you need to build a beautiful friendship, you better do it, even if you have to let go of a lot of other important activities. If you need to be with your child, to love her and let her know how important she is to you and to God, even if it keeps you from getting your next promotion, you better do it. If you need to dig in a garden and plant a seed and watch a flower begin to grow, you better get to it. If you need to build institutions which will create new neighborhoods where people may flourish, let nothing stop you. If you need to sing a song, sing. If you need to dance, dance. Give yourself to whatever is your unique creativity. And if others don't understand, that's their problem, not yours. You must do what you have been created to do. Why? Because God the Creator is continually breaking forth, flowing with limitless energy and life. You don't have to hoard your creative resources and dribble them out little by little. You can be lavish, absolutely prodigal in letting your creativity flow, because you cannot exhaust the Creator's resources. And that is what it means to be a saint. In cheering us on in this great endeavor is this great cloud of witnesses from every time and place, joined with the pit crew of family, friends, and congregation, all cheering us on. They make the Seahawks' 12th man sound like your volume, your sound off, all of a sudden went off your TV. I see this great cloud of witnesses, this great pit crew of every time and place, constantly encouraging us. Go for it, St. Mark. You can do it. Susan, Mark, Bill, or Mabel. Wow, look at that, Edith. Beautiful, Paul. And just think, they say. Just think. Because of you, someone will experience what it means to be human with fresh eyes. Because of you, someone will feel the touch of God. Because of you, someone will find truth or beauty or goodness, justice or peace in a world that seemed empty. Someone will discover from you that to be genuinely human is to be alive with love and laughter. A man, a woman, or a child will know that someone cares, feels needed, wanted, loved. The earth may even feel like a garden and less like a resource. All because in our time, we have walked as sisters and brothers in the great cloud of witnesses of every time and place who have shared mercy and lived bravely and faithfully, justly and thankfully as followers of Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of grace and peace and all that stuff. Amen.